Knicks season got off to a poor start, as you would expect in Oklahoma City on Thursday night, as Carmelo Anthony got a little bit of revenge against his former team. And let's talk a little Knicks and run around the NBA, talk about Lynn and his injury with Brooklyn as well, as we welcome aboard Brian Geltzeiler, HoopsCritic.com, SiriusXM NBA Radio, and also NBA TV. Check him out. He's all over the place, does a fantastic job. Good morning, Geltz. How are you doing, bud?
I'm good, Mark. Pleasure to be with you, pal.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine. Long time no speak, as the NBA season is already upon us, and a lot of interesting storylines. Certainly the catastrophic injury with Gordon Hayward. We'll get upon that and touch upon that with the Boston Celtics here on opening night momentarily. But what did you take away? I mean, I saw all the stuff from Melo on social media, Instagram, walking out of hell and everything like that. What did you make of the Thunder-Knicks matchup on Thursday night?
Well, I mean, quite obviously, it was a very talented team versus a team that doesn't have a lot of talent. And the Thunder, you know, took their time and methodically dismantled the Knicks last night. And it wasn't really pretty in the second half. But expect a lot of this with this New York Knicks team. This is a team that's in major rebuild mode. You have one great player in Porzingis. You're not even sure what you have around him. And, you know, Scott Perry comes in and kind of is looking a clean slate this thing, figure out what he likes, what he doesn't like. They have a couple of tough contracts on the books in Noah and, to a little bit of a lesser extent, Courtney Lee. So there's going to be no free agency rescue coming soon. That was supposed to be Tim Hardaway, whether he can do it on a team that really isn't good like this without a good point guard. I mean, geez, first game of the season tonight, you start Ramon Sessions at point guard. It's a tough situation for the Knicks, and quite frankly, your main concern is that it's very tough for Porzingis to develop and be what he can be in an environment like this. You know, context is everything in the NBA, Mark. You need support around you, and especially for a young big like him, he needs a guard to be able to work with in tandem. It's a sad commentary on where the New York Knicks are that Ramon Sessions started a point guard tonight, and as far as Carmelo is concerned, good for him. He was mistreated so poorly, not only by Phil Jackson, but as you hear from him now, and he's willing to talk about it a little bit, the organization in general, where he thought some other people should have jumped to his aid in that front office, no one did, and no one wanted to challenge Phil on what Phil had to say publicly about Carmelo Anthony, and Anthony felt very slighted. He got out of there. He got to a place that basketball-wise, he's really going to enjoy playing on this team. And you know what? He had a fun time on that court tonight. He went through a lot of miserable years in New York, and some of it was on him, and a lot of it wasn't on him. And for him to be in a better basketball place, I'm happy for him, Mark. I really am.
Yeah, so am I, honestly. And listen, he is not without sin with how some situations played out and how he handled some situations. Put that aside. The way that the Knicks handled them, the way that they didn't follow through, the way that Phil Jackson treated him, the Knicks franchise, I mean, him working out in a park in New York City, and they're obviously laughing at the video down in Orlando and then denying it. I mean, what it showed you is that a lot of the personnel in the Knicks front office, they've got little to no backbone. They really don't.
Well, listen, the part of the problem with why this thing couldn't have been repaired with Anthony was because Jim Dolan kept on a lot of the old regime. This whole, you know, Steve Mills been there for a long time, and I don't know what it is. I mean, listen, not that Mills is a bad guy, and not that when he's not the lead here, he doesn't do a terrible job, but as a lead personnel exec, I'm not sure that's the right guy to lead the way, and certainly
agreed.
That was here when all this stuff happened with Jackson. What you needed to do was purge, and it was such a great opportunity with David Griffin available, Mark. He would have been so perfect to come in here, but you just had to give him the autonomy that he wanted. It's autonomy they really didn't want to give to Steve Kerr here when Phil was here. You know, they had a big problem with Steve Kerr not wanting certain people associated with the organization if he was going to come in. David Griffin just wanted say over who was going to work in his office on his staff. That wasn't enough. So, you know, the Knicks, you know, Jim Dolan likes to be able to control what he wants to control and then let somebody else take the blame for a lot of that stuff. At one point or another, if you really want the organization to win and be successful in earnest, you need to hand the reins to a guy who's a basketball guy who can run it his way with a proven track record. And David Griffin fell in your lap, and they just didn't take advantage of it. No. And listen, it's part of the reason they couldn't repair this thing with Carmelo. It really is. If you had clean slated it, you had a shot to repair it, keep it two more years, and maybe you have a chance to compete for a playoff spot and make a decent free agency signing or two. But that's, you know, that ship sailed. It's going to be a couple of miserable couple of years in New York here.
You know, I tell you, Brian, it's going to bother me if Neil Aquino, I don't know what he's going to be. Honestly, I laughed at the idea a couple weeks ago with the report saying that, you know, he's like Kyrie Irving. I mean, come on. I mean, let's see what the 19-year-old Frenchman, let's see what he develops into, actually. Number one. Number two, it's going to bother me if Smith, and the early returns down in Dallas are pretty good. It's going to bother me if he turns out to be this great player and the Knicks decided to draft a player at the time with Phil still running this thing that fit the triangle offense instead of drafting the best available player.
You know, Mark, from what I understand, that it was Phil was kind of on an island in his own front office about that being the right selection.
I mean, come
on. He was steadfast about it. And listen, I feel bad for Frank. He's a nice kid. He's in a very tough spot here. He's with an organization and a front office. And essentially, he knows he wasn't their first choice. And that's a hard spot to be in. Plus, there's going to be added pressure. It's New York. You know, you see what Dennis Smith is doing. Malik Monk, I think, is going to contribute nicely for Charlotte. Another guy they could have selected. It was not the right pick for this organization. And it becomes very embarrassing for the Knicks when the guy that makes it gets fired 6 days later. You know, it doesn't exactly scream foresight and planning when stuff like that happens. So now the kid's in that kind of spot. But I would also tell you this. Scott Perry's not a dummy, and I think it's very important, as much as we criticize the Knicks, you know, bringing him in, and if Steve Mills is going to let him operate with the kind of autonomy he should have with his track record, he will do a decent job here of turning this thing around. And if they're not sold on Neil Aquino, I do have some confidence in Scott Perry's willingness and guts to pull a trigger on a deal to get him out and bring someone else in he thinks can help more. Because, you know, if Neil Aquino is not your guy, I know there was other teams that liked him. I know Dallas liked them a lot. And if you could find somewhere to trade him and get some value back in a Phoenix deal, who knows? There's teams out there that's going to be willing to deal. He's a guy in the first year of a rookie deal. If you don't like him, don't be shy about moving him.
We're talking to Brian Geltzeiler, HoopsCritic.com, SiriusXM NBA Radio, and NBA TV as well. All right, Geltz, what about the Thunder with what they did with what we saw? And it's only game one, I mean, for them, but as they knocked around the Knicks. But how close do you think Oklahoma City is, if at all, to Golden State out west?
I think they're pretty close. I think this can be very, very special. And when you see, like, what happened tonight, you know, one of the big things to watch this year with OKC is going to be shot distribution among Anthony, George, and Westbrook. Russell Westbrook learned a couple of very valuable lessons last year. Number one, he is capable of averaging a triple-double in the NBA. Number two, he can take 24 shots a game and give everything he has, an average of triple-double. And if he doesn't have other talented players around him, he's not going to get further than the first round of the playoffs, because that's what happened to him last year. So he has two guys that are extremely talented players that are with him in a location where he won MVP, and he's the franchise guy, and no one disputes that. And he gets to be lead dog. And for him, it's not about his ego and awards anymore. He got his MVP award. He proved what he wanted to prove. This is about winning. And these two guys, Anthony and George, are going to be terrific with him. Look at the shot distribution tonight, Mark. 23 for George, 20 for Anthony, 12 for Russell Westbrook, 7 of 12. You're going to see a much more efficient version of Russell Westbrook, and that's dangerous with two guys that, let's face it, can both fill the bucket. And with Paul George's ability to defend, and Will Robertson defensively, and Steven Adams, who's a very underrated guy and going to be really good with this group, it's a pretty dangerous team. Could they use another bench piece or two? They certainly could, and that may happen at one point or another. But you know what? If you're the Warriors, they're not going to be easy. And I'll tell you right now, I think they're winning over 60 games in the Western Conference this year. I think they're clearly the second-best team. And if I'm the Warriors, that's the team I'm the most worried about. The Thunder can be scary to me, Mark.
Yeah, it's interesting. You think the Thunder more so than the Rockets, Brian?
Oh, much more. Much more, because you know something? The league is trending here towards size on the perimeter. Think about how Golden State buries you. It's not only the fact that Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson are elite shooters, and obviously Steph Curry, but it's between Curry's fast release and Thompson's size and Durant's size, their ability to shoot over you. And really, you know, it's hard to contest with these types of big guys in the wings that can shoot the ball that way. You need size on the perimeter to be able to play with them. And Paul George is that kind of player. And to a little bit of a lesser extent, Melo is that kind of player. Maybe not on the defensive end of the floor, but he's formidable from a physical standpoint on the offensive end of the floor, both inside and on the perimeter. So you look at what they met Golden State with, which is something that can match up with them. For whatever you want to say about the Rockets, it's a small backcourt with Paul and Harden, and it's going to hurt them defensively big time in a playoff series against the Warriors. I know they beat them the other night. They didn't have Iguodala. They lost Draymond. It's going to hurt them big time in a playoff series. So, and then the other thing you have to worry about with them, and the other night it went great for them, and they only won the game by 1 point, is, you know, Tucker and Bahamut, they threw in a bunch of threes. You can't count on that every night, but those guys are bricklayers. These are not good shooters who are getting a lot of open looks, and Golden State left them open by design. They happen to hit shots. More times than not, that's not going to happen. Houston's flawed in a lot of different ways, and not only that, they're kind of in at a dead end here with being able to make any kind of more meaningful personnel moves to add to this group, which I don't think is good enough to beat Golden State. If I got to pick between OKC or Houston, I like OKC's hand much better in a playoff series against Golden State than I do Houston.
But let me ask you this, Brian. As this season starts, would you be surprised if it's not Golden State in the NBA Finals?
Oh, yeah. No, I think Golden State, it's going to be Golden State in the NBA Finals, and I think Golden State's going to win it all. But I think it's going to be really, really hard. And I think that for a variety of reasons. First of all, the fact is you can't underrate how difficult it is to make it to four straight NBA Finals. And think about how many teams in history actually have done that. That's a very, very hard thing to do. One of the reasons is because of all the extra games you have to play every year deep into June. Your season runs longer than most any other team is going to play against. And that makes it really difficult to be able to go to four finals in a row. Then I look at the Thunder, and I just made the case for how well I think they match up with Golden State. And I think Golden State's going to have a very hard time getting past them. So I think they will. I think they probably will. But I'm telling you, look for seven-game series. Look for a slugfest back and forth. I think OKC is that good. And I got to tell you something, I love Cleveland. I really do. I know that they didn't play a wonderful game against Boston the other night. It was a weird night with Hayward getting hurt like that. But I think they're a much better team than last year. I think Isaiah Thomas can function much the same way Kyrie did in that offense. I don't think that's a major downgrade for how Cleveland plays. And you saw it the other night, Jay Crowder is an enormous piece there. Lou's got to figure out what he's doing with that bench. And I don't love the way he's using Tristan Thompson. I think that's a little bit of an issue. There's so much depth there and so much talent. And when Isaiah Thomas comes back, that's going to be a really, really good team. Again, I don't know that they can beat Golden State. They can take him to six or seven.
We're talking to Brian Geltzeiler, SiriusXM NBA Radio, HoopsCritic.com, NBA TV. Geltz, you hit upon it. I mean, you feel terrible. Anytime you see the kind of injury you saw with Gordon Hayward, who went to Boston, left Utah, you know, the sign of, you know, they bring in Kyrie Irving as well, greener pastures ahead, and then you see that kind of an injury. I mean, not only do you feel, I mean, you feel terrible for him, the individual. I mean, it's such a startling injury, and you watch the video, it almost makes you nauseous seeing his ankle dislocated the way it was, but that is a, I mean, that is as bad as it gets when you look at that kind of an injury.
Yeah, no, it's, first of all, horribly graphic in terms of how it happened. And just when you see players on a basketball court, Mark, everybody reacting the way those guys reacted, you realize how horrific that had to be. And we saw the visuals. Those guys were reacting to the sound they heard. Because that what happened to Gordon Hayward makes a horrible, horrible sound. And so, you know, it's a tough spot for the Celtics. It's an awful spot for Hayward. Listen, $28 million a year for 4 years. And you know, you feel awful for the guy. By the same token, we got to look at the basketball ramifications of it. You know, should he recover? Listen, Paul George recovered from a pretty horrific injury when he had it. It was a pretty ugly thing. For this, it's, you know, Hayward's going to, he got the surgery last night. You know, he won't be back this year. Hopefully we see him back next year. But in the meantime, for Boston, listen, Mark, I got to tell you, I had Boston as a four seed before Hayward got hurt. This is going to take some time to come together. I understand you got Kyrie Irving, but Isaiah Thomas was a major player for you last year.
It was.
You know, Avery Bradley was your best defensive player, and he's not there anymore. And Jay Crowder was a really important piece to what they did. Now, listen, Jaylen Brown looks great here early on, and is going to be a guy that's going to play a big-time role, and this may end up benefiting him huge in the long term. And listen, he's playing Tatum a lot out of desperation because he needs rebounding. So no one else can rebound. But I think for your young guys, they're going to develop very nicely. Marcus Smart's going to play himself into a big deal here. He's going to have a big role. I think they'll be a playoff team. I think they'll be a four seed. I still think they'll be a four seed without Hayward, because I think they're going to be developing along the way, and it's going to be a step back for them to take a couple of giant steps forward, because this team is about 2 years away from being a major title contender.
All right, so then who's the biggest challenge to the Cavaliers in the East?
Washington Wizards. That's the one I'd worry about. You know what? Those guys, Wall and Beal are learning how, what it's like to win in the playoffs. They've gotten beaten up enough. They've come up small enough, big games. And I think these guys are angry, and they're due. I like the fact that they have some quality size with Gortat, and hopefully Mahimi will be healthy for a full season. They've done a decent job of building a bench here. Kelly Oubre is a year better. I pick Kelly Oubre as my sixth man of the year. I'm very high on the Wizards this year. I think Brooks does an excellent job with them. And I think, listen, Wall was a terrific player last year. I think he'll be the same this year. I think Beal makes a major jump here into being a big-time guy for them. So, I don't think they'll beat the Cavs, but I think they could take the Cavs to six in a playoff series. I think the Wizards are going to have a super, super year. I'm much higher on the Wizards and the Raptors than I am on the Celtics. I really am. I think this is a tough spot for the Celtics. But for the Wizards here, to me, this is a team, as long as these two guys stay healthy, very, very difficult team for teams to contend with. They can play big, they can play small, they can play fast, they can play slow. There's a lot of versatility on this roster. Porter's a guy who's going to be a year better, developed nicely. I think the Wizards are going to be a really, really good team. And he's a team everybody's underrated here in the preseason.
You know, Geltz, I'm curious with LeBron here. It looks like we're looking at, a round four between the Cavs and the Warriors in the NBA Finals. What about everyone seemed to think about 4 or 5 months ago there was a foregone conclusion. LeBron was going to leave the Cavaliers. He's got his buddy Wade there now. They made some adjustments. Irving's now a member of the Boston Celtics. What about the LeBron relationship with Cavs management, specifically the owner?
Well, I think you'll know everything you need to know at the trade deadline, Mark, is that if LeBron's going to stay or go. Because if LeBron can sell them on the fact that he actually would really stay, they might trade that Nets pick to try to get that roster good enough and add one more piece to go beat Golden State right now. The thing is that if you're the Cavs, unless I have his name signed on a deal, I'm not trading that pick. So, LeBron's got them and that's the thing about LeBron here. You want to hold them hostage so you have all these options. Well, you know what? Now they got this pick. And if you actually give them a real indication what you're going to do, if you really want to commit there long term, they can help you a ton here. I'm just not sure that he wants to do that. I'm really not. I think the thing for LeBron is this. He not that I think he's given up against Golden State, but I also feel like his legacy is kind of cemented. And I think this is going to be more about enjoying his later years in basketball. And I think this L.A. lifestyle is what he wants long term. And then that's going to play a very, very big role where LeBron kind of graduates from, making these decisions for a basketball player and in more about making these decisions for a guy that wants to live the rest of his life. And settling in L.A. is something I think is very attractive to him. So I don't know that he's going to make that commitment to the Cavaliers, and let's face it, if they were able to go get the right piece with that Brooklyn pick, they could have a better shot at the Warriors and potentially beat them. But LeBron's not going to, I don't think he's going to allow them that luxury.
Brian, let's go over to Brooklyn, and you mentioned the Nets. Felt terrible for Lin and his reaction on the court where he got upset, where he knew he thought his knee was A-OK, and then obviously could sense that it was not. I like Atkinson as a coach. What about Brooklyn this year?
Well, listen, this hurts him. I mean, they were close to 500 with Lin in the lineup last year.
Right.
He made a very big difference for them. And
he's a good player, Brian. He is.
He's a very good player. And it's funny, Knicks fans want to treat him like a dog treats a fire hydrant. The Knicks would have been better off keeping him when they had a chance to keep him. He's a good guard, Jeremy Lin. And this is, you feel bad for him because, he's trying to add something and bring something here, and he wants a contract after this. And this is going to make it harder for him to get it. It's a serious injury. I mean, ruptured his patella. It's a major deal. But I also think one of the things for Brooklyn where it's going to become harder for them with D'Angelo Russell. Because with D'Angelo Russell, there's a discipline thing with him. It's an on-court discipline thing. It's an off-court discipline thing. And I think you have to handle him a little bit heavy-handed. And one of the ways you can handle him a little heavy-handed is if you can show him, if you're not going to do it our way on the court, we will sit you on the bench. And, oh, by the way, we have a really good option in your place that we don't have to suffer all that much. Well, that really good option is out for the season. So for Russell to be able to kind of get him where you want to get him and be able to really lay serious consequences to him and sit him on the bench, let's face it, if you're going to sit him on the bench, all due respect, I love Sean Kilpatrick, one of the great stories in the NBA. I'm not bagging on the guy. He's not exactly a point guard. If you're going to put him at point guard, which is kind of what they were doing last year with Isaiah Whitehead, who, again, good player, he's going to be a kid that can help them eventually, not a point guard. If those guys you're putting in the game to try to show consequences to D'Angelo Russell, It's not really going to work. If Jeremy Lin's the guy, and all of a sudden Jeremy Lin's out there, and he's scoring and carrying the team, DeAndre Russell's going to say, wait a second, I got to be a little nervous about my job. This guy's pretty good. It's not going to work that way, and it's going to be harder for them with Russell. Because the thing about Russell is, and he's very talented, he's also very immature, and he's also a guy that's been very difficult in that Laker locker room, and I'm not sure he's changed much here in Brooklyn. Listen, he's got a clean slate. Let's see what he does with it, and he's got a lot of talent. But having Lin there would have helped the Nets a whole lot with D'Angelo Russell.
Brian Geltzahler, HoopsCritic.com, SiriusXM NBA Radio, and also check him out on NBA TV on Friday nights. Geltz, always a pleasure. You do a fantastic job, and enjoy the rest of your Friday, and we'll do it again real soon.
I look forward to it, Mark. Anytime, buddy. Talk to you soon.
You got it.